You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good afternoon to everybody. I hope you're having a good day. I know some of you are getting hammered by storms up in the Northeast and the Midwest, but hopefully the winter is going to be over before long. We thought it was over here in Dallas, but today we're getting some rain and a little bit of cold weather. But we need the rain. We're still fighting the drought here in Texas and have been for a while. But let's start off today on our Constitution by talking about one of the things that the President of the United States is charged with doing, and by the Constitution, that Obama is in fact not doing, and that's protecting the people of the United States, protecting our vital interest at home and abroad. It's called foreign policy, and the President is supposed to be one of the primary architects of foreign policy. Of course, he's not supposed to do it on his own. He's supposed to make proposals to Congress and get Congress involved. That's part of the balance of powers in our Constitution. But the President of the United States that we have right now is well on his way to turning our foreign policy into a non-existent disaster area. I mean, we've had weak presidents before. I mean, Jimmy Carter, look at Jimmy Carter. He didn't know what he was doing. You know, he allowed the Iranian hostage crisis to take place and allowed our people to be kept prisoner for almost a year. The only thing that finally freed them was the fact that Ronald Reagan got elected President of the United States and basically gave the Iranians an option: release the Americans that you're holding captive or we will turn Iran into a parking lot. And he was ready to put the planes in the air. In fact, I think on his inauguration day did put the planes in the air, because within a few minutes of him being inaugurated, the Iranians announced that they were going to release the Americans. And Ronald Reagan did more than just that. Ronald Reagan brought down the Soviet Union. He destroyed communism in Russia and in Eastern Europe. He did his best to protect Americans against terrorism. When there was a terrorist attack on Americans, he launched strikes, airstrikes, against Libya. He did what needed to be done. Under Ronald Reagan, we had a President of the United States who was strong. And America was strong. He didn't particularly care if people in the other parts of other countries around the world liked the United States. He didn't care if the governments liked the United States. He was doing what he needed to do as president, and that was to make sure that they feared and respected the United States, that they were not going to take advantage of American citizens. They were not going to do things that would hurt our country, because if they did, there would be retaliation, and strong retaliation. Bill Clinton, on the other hand, when he got elected president, he was weak. He had opportunities, for example, on several occasions, to kill bin Laden. We knew how dangerous that man was. We knew how much he wanted to do harm to this country and the people of this country. Bill Clinton, a couple of times, he was within sights of cruise missiles that were going to be could be launched. And in both cases, Clinton hesitated, and it didn't happen. And the one time he did launch missiles, it was against the wrong targets. So we had a weak President of the United States in Bill Clinton, and as a result, we had the terrorist emboldened, and it resulted in 9/11. Now, that occurred when George Bush was President of the United States, and his reaction was to attack Afghanistan and destroy the Taliban and destroy the home base of Al-Qaeda. He successfully did that. Since that time, however, under Obama, we have basically given away what we got there. Afghanistan will no longer deal with the United States. They want our troops out of there, apparently, which means the Taliban will probably be reestablished, and the Al-Qaeda will be reestablished in at least parts of Afghanistan. Bush, it's widely thought, made mistakes by going into Iraq, particularly since they supposedly found no WMDs, weapons of mass destruction. As a matter of fact, they were there. I know for a fact, because I've seen the intelligence, and I've talked to people who boots on the ground there. I know for a fact that the WMD that was there was moved Syria by the Russians. There was a general there, an Iraqi general, who said he saw the moves take place. He helped supervise them. There's aerial photographs of Russian trucks and vehicles loading up something at a major weapon storage area. So the WMD was there, and whether or not it was found or not doesn't matter. In fact, Saddam Hussein had to be taken out. But, of course, now we've pulled out of Iraq completely, and things are falling apart there. But that's not the worst of what Obama's done. Obama has basically betrayed our friends and appeased our enemies. That's what the Obama foreign policy is all about, retreat and appeasement. We have a situation where Iran, despite the fact that they supposedly have worked out a deal and are going to formalize that deal in a few months, Iran is continuing to develop the enriched uranium it needs to have nuclear weapons. It's the same thing that happened in North Korea. This happened under George Bush's watch and under Obama's watch. The North Koreans made promises to us that they would not become a nuclear power, and they became a nuclear power. They have at least 5 nuclear weapons that we know of. And based on the intelligence that I've been getting, the Iranians already have a nuclear weapon. They don't have a delivery system for it yet, but they have a nuclear weapon. And they are willing to use that nuclear weapon or allow it to be used. And when I say allow it to be used, sell it to some terrorist organization such as Al-Qaeda or Hamas or Hezbollah and have them try to use it in Europe or sneak it across the border from Mexico and bring it to this country. Obama's now decided to virtually stop all deportation of illegals coming in from Mexico and to stop enforcement on the border, to allow anybody to come in at any time, carry them wherever they want. That seems to be the game plan. So we are wide open to attack from our southern border. This is part of Obama's foreign policy. But now we have a situation in the Ukraine. We have the reemergence of Russia as a world power, and Putin is basically a new dictator. Yeah, they haven't reestablished communism in Russia, not formally, but Putin says he really misses it. He said that was the biggest disaster for the Soviet Union was when they ceased to be the Soviet Union. They lost Ukraine and Poland, Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, all of their satellites that they control, all of those countries, and he would like to get them back. Well, he sees how weak the president is. Remember when he was running for re-election, when he made the comment on an open mic to the Russian foreign minister that tell Putin that once I'm re-elected, I'll have a lot more flexibility? What did that mean exactly? Well, obviously it meant flexibility to destroy the U.S. military capabilities and to stop us from being able to do anything, to stop the Russians, to stop the Chinese, to stop whoever decides they may want to take us out. We already have Obama unilaterally cutting some of our nuclear capability. He's been doing that now ever since he's been in office, allowing some of our weapon systems that are outdated to not be replaced and allowing the degradation of many of our nuclear warheads. He's been doing that on his own, as he does virtually everything else on his own. And he's pushing for a new treaty with Russia that basically would disarm the entire United States of nuclear weapons, but allow Russia to keep some of theirs. Of course, it would have nothing to do with China. China could have all of them they wanted. The Iranians would still have nuclear weapons. The Pakistanis would have nuclear weapons. The Indians would have nuclear weapons. But the United States, he pretty much wants to disarm us. So Putin decides to use the opportunity of a weak president of the United States to invade the Ukraine. And essentially that's what he did. He invaded the Ukraine. And then there was a sham election held, an illegal election, to allow the people of the Crimea to vote on whether or not to stay in part of the Ukraine or to go to Russia. Well, supposedly they overwhelmingly voted to go to Russia, which you can't do. It would be like somebody coming into this country, and like from Mexico coming into this country and saying, we want to have an election in Texas as to whether or not Texas can rejoin Mexico, and then holds a sham election to make sure that it passes. That would be violating the integrity of the borders of the United States by a foreign nation. That's what Putin has done. Obama's let him completely get by with it. These so-called sanctions that Obama's putting on people, on Russia, they're not on Russia at all. They're on some individuals in Russia, some of which, it turns out, are actually people opposing Putin and what he's doing. They're putting sanctions, the U.S. is putting sanctions on their bank accounts. They were told 2 weeks before it happened that the European Union and the United States were going to be doing this. So what they do, they move their money out of the bank accounts that were going to be sanctioned, were going to be seized, and they moved to somewhere else. So they lost nothing. So we did nothing to Russia. Now, the question is, what could we have done? What should we have done? Well, obviously, we don't want to put boots on the ground. We don't want to go in and start a war with Russia over the Ukraine. But we can supply weapons to the Ukraine. We can help reinforce them. We can give them foreign aid to help them stay on their feet. And the Congress is moving to do that. Whether or not Obama will agree to what the Congress passes is, remains to be seen, but I really don't see how he can. But there's something else out there that Obama could have done and should have done, which would have been much more effective and much more beneficial, not only to the Ukrainians, but also to the people of the United States. And that is, Europe is being weak on this because so much of the natural gas and oil the Europeans rely on comes through the Ukraine, through the pipelines. And the Russians are threatening to shut off those pipelines. If the United States did what it's perfectly capable of doing, if we were to start developing our own natural resources, the tremendous amounts of natural gas we have, the tremendous amount of oil we have, and start importing that, not only taking care of our own needs so that we don't have to import from the Middle East or from Russia or anywhere else, but start exporting this to the European countries, they would no longer have to rely on Putin or the Middle East. At the same token, we'd be creating thousands of American jobs. We'd have the Keystone Pipeline put in, which would create thousands of jobs. Our price of oil and gas would plummet. We would not be paying nearly as much at the pump as we're paying now. This winter has been really tough on people. Utility bills would not be as high. It would be a win-win situation for the United States. We'll take our first break now, and then we'll talk afterwards about why we're not doing this.
Who is or what is USJF? It is a nonprofit legal organization founded to protect our rights through the U.S. Constitution. Active in educating the public, USJF has also contributed directly and indirectly to legal defense efforts in many celebrated cases involving fundamental conservative principles. Cases of note include the Mount Soledad Cross case, the Arizona immigration law case, the Obama eligibility cases, the NDAA illegal detention issue, and many more. Help this nonprofit as they help you. Visit www.usjf.net today.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on americaswebradio.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
As I said before we went on the break, we have the opportunity to break Putin's back, to stop dependence by our own people and our own government on foreign oil, including oil and gas coming out of Russia, and yet we're not doing it. Why? Well, most people point to Obama's extreme positions on the environment. Despite the fact that scientists all around the world are now saying that global warming doesn't exist, that the climate change that we have seen occurring is a natural phenomenon which occurs in Mother Nature on a periodic basis. It has nothing to do with what man is putting into the environment. It has nothing to do with so-called green gases, and is basically a fraud. And yet Obama is using climate change to impose radical views, and those of his friends, on the American people. He is basically in the process of violating the Constitution by using the EPA to shut down the coal industry in this country. And he's getting together with other countries to enforce that, even in our own country. He's using the EPA to shut off a lot of our offshore drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, in the Atlantic, and Pacific Ocean. He's put a moratorium on any new drilling there. He's refused to approve the Keystone Pipeline, despite the fact that his own government, the EPA and others, have done studies showing that this would not have any negative impact on the environment at all, while at the same time creating numerous jobs. Yet Obama goes with his greenhouse gases business, that we cannot have coal-powered plants. Americans have to bite the bullet and watch their utility bills go up by some 300% just so Obama can appease the environmentalists. Well, that's one theory, and it's partially true. The other thing is that we have a president of the United States who actively wants the United States to become a second-rate power. He wants to destroy our prestige in the world. He wants to destroy our economic power. He wants us to become subservient to our own government and to the United Nations. And if you have any questions about this, just look at what's going on. Go to my blog at www.michaelconnelly.jigsy.com. And take a look at the articles of impeachment I posted. In the next day or two, I'll be posting another article on another constitutional subject. But take a look at the articles of impeachment that I've posted. And these same articles of impeachment are, as we speak, being sent to select members of Congress. And that lays out in those articles what Obama is doing to destroy our country, to destroy our Constitution, and to make us a second-rate power. And it basically turned us from a constitutional republic. Because unlike people who are being taught in school, we're not a democracy. We are a constitutional republic. Obama wants to destroy that and turns us into a socialist state with himself as dictator. He considers himself an emperor, a king, a dictator, whatever you want to call it. He does not believe that he is required to abide by the Constitution. He does not believe that he has to abide by his oath of office to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So he doesn't intend to do it. And part of the process is to destroy the economy of the United States and make us weak throughout the world. And he's accomplishing all of that. That's why he won't build the Keystone Pipeline. That's why he won't allow America to drill for more oil and natural gas. He uses the environmentalist as an excuse, but the real reason is He wants to denigrate the Constitution of the United States and denigrate this country to the point where he can use some kind of event for some reason to declare martial law. If he can bring down the economy of the United States, he can declare martial law. And in his mind, that means he becomes an instant dictator. That's why he's cutting our military to the bone. He doesn't want the military opposing him. That's why the Department of Homeland Security has bought over 1.5 billion rounds of ammunition. That's why federal agencies like the Social Security Administration, the EPA, the National Weather Service are all buying up ammunition. Obama is in the process of creating his own private army. We have not listened to this man. He said he was going to do this when he was running for election in 2008. He said that one of his goals was to set up a civilian defense force that was as well-funded and as well-armed as the U.S. military. For what purpose? Well, essentially one purpose. A force that is loyal only to Obama. A force that does not take an oath of office to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, such as all members of our military do. And by the way, so do all employees of the government, including the elected officials, like members of Congress and the president, and appointed officials like cabinet members, czars. I wonder if any of the czars that have been appointed by Obama took this oath of office. Have you ever seen pictures of any of them being sworn in or taking the oath? I'd be willing to bet that they never did, that they weren't required to. But the point is, there are federal criminal penalties for violating that oath of office. Yet Obama continues to do that on a daily basis. And he doesn't want to have to deal with the military who believe in the oath, simply because Obama doesn't believe in it and wants to, in fact, use it to destroy our own country. Because he wants to get people to be beholden to him. And, you know, I pointed out, I made a speech the other day in Mesquite, Texas. And for those of you out there that are interested in me making speeches to your group, I'll speak on all aspects of the Constitution. I'll talk about the Second Amendment. I'll talk about the First Amendment. I'll talk about all of it together. But if you want me to make a speech, you can contact me at my personal email at the Justice Foundation, U.S. Justice Foundation email, because I am Executive Director of the United States Justice Foundation. Contact me at Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, at USJF, that's the United States Justice Foundation, usjfmail.net. And let me know where you are and when you would like for me to speak, and we can work out the details then. And I will be glad to come and make the speeches. But the other day I was making a speech in Mesquite, Texas, to the 2nd Senatorial District, Texas Senatorial District Convention. And I pointed out some similarities, which are absolutely true and very, very frightening. When Adolf Hitler was elected Chancellor of Germany, and yes, he was elected, what was the first thing he did? Well, most people don't realize the first thing he did was to nationalize the healthcare industry. He figured that if he could control people's access to health care, he could control the people. The second thing he did was to start disarming the German people, beginning with the veterans. Now, we have 21 million veterans in this country. We all took the same oath of office that Obama took. We are trained to fight for our country. We're obligated to fight for our country, and many of us are armed. In Germany, Hitler knew that the veterans there had taken an oath of office to defend their constitution of Germany and their country, not an oath to him. So he wanted to disarm them, and he did, effectively. And then he finished talking about disarming the German people. Obama's doing the same thing here, and we've been talking about it now for weeks. and the lawsuits that the USJF is involved in trying to defend our veterans from losing their Second Amendment rights. But that was the second step that Hitler took. The third step that Hitler took was to purge the German military from the high-ranking officers who supported the German people, supported the Constitution, and were not personally loyal to Adolf Hitler. He did this effectively. Obama's doing the same thing. We've had dozens of high-ranking officers purged from the military for some bogus, sometimes for bogus reasons, sometimes for no reason at all. This is constant and is ongoing. And then another step that Hitler took was to broaden the definition of mental illness to the point where in Germany, if somebody opposed Hitler's administration, if somebody vocally spoke out against it, they wouldn't arrest them and put them in the court system where they would have to have a lawyer and have to have a trial and this sort of thing. They would just declare them mentally ill and take them and stick them in an institution somewhere. No trial, no public hearing, no court appearance, no writ of habeas corpus, nothing. Just have them disappear into the mental institution or eventually into a concentration camp where they would ultimately die or be put to death. That sound familiar? Obama has just signed an executive order telling the states that he wants them to violate the HIPAA law, which provides us our right to privacy of our medical records, so that the information in those records can be turned over to the FBI, so that if you've ever been depressed, if you've ever taken certain medications, like for ADD or ADHD, you can be declared mentally ill and denied your right to keep and bear arms, be put on the National Criminal Incident Background Checklist. If you've ever had PTSD, a number of reasons. So all of this is in the works with Obama, and it's to destroy our ability to defend ourselves, both abroad and at home. Now, just 2 days ago, Obama made Obama's budget for the military. There was a devastating blow to our military if it passes Congress, and hopefully the Republicans are going to be able to block this part of the budget. Obama really didn't want a budget anyway, but the thing is he is canceling in his budget all of our cruise missile programs for the U.S. Navy, our Tomahawk and Harold Hellfire missiles. You remember hearing about those? They were used so effectively in the Gulf War. They were used so effectively in Afghanistan and Iraq to destroy enemy positions. They are an essential part of the defense of our Navy. And let's take our second break, and we'll talk more about that in a minute.
The United States Justice Foundation, since 1979, has been dedicated to instructing, informing, and educating the public on legal issues confronting America. That means you and me. When necessary, this nonprofit organization has had to litigate to present the constitutional view. Since 1980, USJF has submitted testimony to the U.S. Senate on all but one U.S. Supreme Court nominee. Learn more about USJF by visiting their website at www.usjf.net. Support this nonprofit as it defends our rights, our liberty, and our Constitution.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
americaswebradio.com is listened to around the world, and we're interested in hearing from you if you've witnessed chemtrails no matter where you are. Just email gm@americaswebradio.com and we'll go from there. Thank you.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, A nonprofit organization is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
So Obama's making these cuts to the military, to our Navy, at a time when we are becoming more and more vulnerable in the world. And the Navy Hellfire and Tomahawk missile systems are crucial to the defense of our Navy around the world and to our offensive capabilities against terrorists, against Iran if necessary. And he's just going to get rid of them. I mean, period, end of subject. Navy's going to be defenseless. He's also going to cut the size of the Navy in half. The Pentagon has come out with a budget because, let's face it, Obama's being successful, as I mentioned, in getting rid of the people in the Pentagon who are loyal to the country. And he's got people in there, and he's Chuck Hagel, his Secretary of Defense, is his personal lapdog. And Chuck Hagel is cutting the military to the bone. If all this goes through, and a lot of these cuts are being made unilaterally by Obama, by the way. They have not been approved by Congress. The ones that were approved by Congress were the cuts made under the so-called sequestration, which at the time that the agreement was reached, I said that this was going to be a disaster. I pointed out that taking six Republicans from the House and Senate and six Republicans from the there's six Democrats from the House and Senate, and saying that they had to come up with an agreement on a budget in order to keep $600 billion in sequestration cuts from taking place, most of them on the military. I said that was never going to happen, that the whole thing was programmed for failure. And it was Obama's idea. And it was his idea, and it was programmed for failure because the Democrats are in lockstep with Obama. I expect them to start raising their hands and say, "Hail Obama," any day now. And some of them, I think, are probably already doing it in private. But the fact of the matter is that I said what was going to happen with sequestration, and it did happen. So Obama used that to cut the military after he'd already cut $500 billion in spending. Now the Pentagon and Obama have come up with budgets that basically reduce our military forces drastically to the point where they're going to be smaller than they were prior to World War II. Size of the Army is going to be cut in half. Size of the Marine Corps is going to be cut in half. The size of the Navy is going to be cut in half. The Air Force, many, almost half of our jet fighters and bombers are going to be grounded permanently. We are not going to be in a position to even defend ourselves against terrorism at home, much less against attacks abroad. And, you know, more and more people are contacting me because the book is selling extremely well all of a sudden. My book, Amigale, A Story of America. And you can go to my website at michaelconnelly.jigsy.com, and you can find reviews of the book and all of my books, as a matter of fact, because The Mortar One, by the way, is doing extremely well. That's a book about my dad's unit during World War II, and it has just exploded. Now, there was like 700 copies sold in December alone, and don't have the figures for this quarter yet because the quarter's not over with, but apparently it's selling extremely well now, both as an e-book and a paperback. And you can buy it anywhere. You can go to Amazon, you can go to Barnes & Noble, you can go to virtually any website and get a copy of that book. But the other one, the novel, Amigale, A Story of America, that's another book that really has startled people, and they're talking about a lot, because I wrote the book 25 years ago, essentially, and I wrote it in my spare time. I was practicing law, and I shoved it in a drawer after I'd written it and thought, well, nobody's going to publish this book, and I let it sit there. Well, then about 5 years ago, I decided to go ahead and redo it and update it and try to get it published. Now, here's the basic premise that I wrote it on, and that was at the time I wrote it originally that the Soviet Union still existed and that we had, and the premise of the novel was we had a weak president of the United States who was cutting our military, with the assistance of Congress. We have news media that was supporting the cuts. We essentially were turning our way from our foreign policy of strength and turning to weakness. And the original version of the book had the Soviet Union doing it, the Russians, but I updated it to make it the Chinese. The Chinese decided to take advantage of our vulnerability and to strike out at us, to take over our country by using space-based weapons on space platforms to essentially destroy what was left of our military. Well, they do this, and we surrender, or our president surrenders, and the book is about the American people rising up to resist occupation. And it's a very patriotic book. Some people have attacked it, some of the left has attacked it ferociously for being too patriotic, to being too pro-American, to being pro-Second Amendment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't care. As far as I'm concerned, if I have those kind of attacks coming from the left, I must have done something right. But the book is selling very well. And one woman not long ago actually called me up, and she said, how did you know? And I didn't know what she was talking about initially. And she says, I'm sitting here reading your novel, I'm a Yaley, and I'm reading the part about the Chinese putting space-based weapons up in outer space, on platforms that they use against us. She says, I just heard on the news that they, in fact, the Chinese have launched rockets or missiles carrying some of those type of platforms that are capable of having weapons on them. And she says, well, how did you know? And I said, well, I just saw it coming, I guess. So anyway, if you're interested in the novel, it's Ami Yaley, and it's the story of America. And like I said, you can go to michaelconnelly.jigsy.com, and you can find out how to order copies, or you can go to Amazon and look up The Mortarmen, M-O-R-T-A-R-M-E-N, and if you look up Ami Yaley, or if you look up any of my books, you'll find all the books listed. And feel free to read the copies of them. If you want to order a signed copy from me directly, you can do that through my website. But the point I'm making is that this is something that basically I've seen coming and other Americans have seen coming. We are in a position where we are being weakened to the point where we are vulnerable. We are very, very vulnerable. And Obama's just continuing to do it. It's got to be reversed. We have got to elect a Congress in November that will stop this from continuing. If we don't, we're going to lose our country. Another thing that Obama's doing, and this breaks my heart, is he's showing utter disrespect and contempt for our military and for our veterans. I mean, the active duty military, you know, in addition to cutting off the size of the military, he's reducing the benefits of the people who are in our military. And these people don't make a lot of money, particularly the enlisted personnel. I mean, your average enlisted man or woman makes about $20,000 a year. Now, they do get some additional benefits, such as housing allowances, and they get to use the commissaries where they can buy their groceries about 30% cheaper, and they can buy them in civilian grocery stores. But all those are part of the budget cuts of Obama's. Housing allowances are going to be reduced. Commissaries are going to be shut down, or what's available in them is going to be reduced. And the pay increases, which usually run about 1.5 to 2% a year, those are going to be cut out to a great extent. Our military is being hamstrung. He wants people not to enlist in the military. He wants people to drop out of the military, to not reenlist. He wants officers to resign their commissions. Why? Because that makes it easier for him to appoint people in the military and to place people in there who are not loyal to this country, are not loyal to the Constitution, who do not believe in the oath of office they will take. And by the way, he's even trying to change the oath of office. In one case, the Air Force Academy has changed its oath that you took as a member of the Academy and removed all reference to God in it. So that's something else that Obama's pushing for, is just change the oath of office. And I can imagine what it would be like if he has his way. But he wants to run out the people in the military who believe in their country, who believe in their oaths, who believe in the Constitution. And he's pushing for this relentlessly. He's destroying the morale of the military. He is, first of all, taking the don't ask, don't tell policy out of the military and putting gays in the military, and then giving gay couples more rights in the military than heterosexual couples have who are not married. And then telling chaplains in the military that they cannot speak about their biblical belief that marriage should be between a man and a woman, that their sermons have to be pre-approved, that their prayers that they say lead people in their churches, their chapels, have to be pre-approved. Members of the military can't have a Bible sitting on their desk in their workplace. They can't talk about their beliefs, unless, of course, they're Muslims. And if they're Muslims, they can talk about their beliefs. If they're Muslims, they can wear their beards. If they're Hindus, they can wear their turbans. But don't dare get caught wearing a Christian cross or any other semblance of your religion if you're a Christian. So it's all part of breaking down the morale of the military. And believe me, I know it's being effective. And it breaks my heart to see it, but I know it's being effective. And then you put that together with the attack on the veterans in this country, the Second Amendment rights of the veterans being taken away by the VA, having been declared ineligible to purchase or own a firearm, and incompetent to handle their own financial affairs because they let their wives pay or husbands pay the bills, or they sometime said that they were depressed over the loss of a friend or a loved one, or they have PTSD. PTSD, by the way, has never been classified as a mental illness until Eric Holder did it personally. And he decided that the criteria for being put on the NICS list of people that cannot purchase firearms, the criteria which calls for being convicted of a felony or being a known drug abuser, or being adjudicated to be mentally ill to the point of being a danger to themselves or others, that criteria is going to be set aside, and anything, any bureaucrat, doesn't take a judge or administrative judge, any bureaucrat at any level of the federal government can determine that you are mentally ill and that you cannot own or possess a firearm. When I say you, because it's not just the veterans. As I mentioned, Obama signed an executive order allowing this to happen to everybody. We'll take our final break now. Talk more in a few minutes.
Who is or what is USJF? It is a nonprofit legal organization founded to protect our rights through the U.S. Constitution. Active in educating the public, USJF has also contributed directly and indirectly to legal defense efforts in many celebrated cases involving fundamental conservative principles. Cases of note include the Mount Soledad Cross case, the Arizona Immigration Law case, the Obama eligibility cases, the NDAA illegal detention issue, and many more. Help this nonprofit as they help you. Visit www.usjf.net today.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
The United States Justice Foundation, since 1979, has been dedicated to instructing, informing, and educating the public on legal issues confronting America. That means you and me. When necessary, this nonprofit organization has had to litigate to present the constitutional view. Since 1980, USJF has submitted testimony to the U.S. Senate on all but one U.S. Supreme Court nominee. Learn more about USJF by visiting their website at www.usjf.net. Support this nonprofit as it defends our rights, our liberty, and our Constitution.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Well, thank you for staying with me through the show today. And in this final second, or final segment, I should say, we're going to talk a little bit more about what's happening to our veterans, but specifically what's happening to the Bill of Rights. And, you know, our veterans are being hammered. They're losing their due process rights. They're getting these letters saying that you're going to be adjudicated to be mentally ill to the point of being endangering yourselves or others. And, well, first of all, it says you're going to be declared incompetent to handle your own financial affairs because of your physical or mental disabilities. And that's pretty fuzzy on its own, because what physical disability? You lost an arm or a leg in combat. You no longer can handle your own financial affairs. Yeah, that seems to be one of the things they're using. Sometimes they don't tell the veterans anything at all. If the veterans want to fight this, they have no due process rights, because the burden of proof is on them to prove that they're not incapable of handling their own affairs. And, of course, the whole purpose of this is to take away the Second Amendment rights to veterans. This is a broad assault going on. Now, the Second Amendment provides specifically that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed upon. That's very simple. Shall not be infringed upon. That means, as far as I'm concerned, that the Congress, and Mark Levine and I agree on this, the Congress cannot have an up or down vote on whether or not they can change the Second Amendment, whether or not they can have gun control in any form, registration, confiscation, even the background checks that are required, violate the Second Amendment. But now we have our schools, and this is primarily a result of Common Core, which, if you don't know anything about Common Core, and it was called C-Scope here in Texas, this is something prepared by the federal government, by the Obama administration, to basically take control of our schools from our local school boards and turn it over to the federal government to decide what the curriculum is. And the curriculum that I've seen coming out of Common Core is basically mostly political propaganda. It's designed in areas of math and science to dumb down our children, to basically make them incapable of doing simple math problems, and to politicize science, to make them believe in climate change, to make sure they believe in evolution as opposed to creationism, which is not even allowed to be talked about, and to make science a political weapon of the Obama administration. But also it's to change history, to alter our history that's being taught to our children, to make the United States out to be a bad country. For example, here in Texas, one of the Common Core tenets was that the members of the Boston Tea Party, prior to the American Revolution, were all actually terrorists. And it also talks about religion, in that in Common Core here in Texas, or C-Scope as it was called, there was a whole several pages in one of the lesson plans about the importance of the Muslim religion and how it was a peace-loving religion and how wonderful it was, and going on to explain to children how they could convert to Islam, encouraging them. And one school actually required, or tried to require, the parents were crazy over this, tried to require the girls to wear burqas, covering their whole body, to school sometimes, so they could find out what it felt like to be a Muslim woman. But they were also told that it was liberating to be a Muslim woman. They were not told that Muslim women are treated like slaves, that they are second-class citizens, that their husbands are empowered under the Quran, supposedly, to beat them for any reason whatsoever, and even to kill them. The daughters are treated the same way. None of this was mentioned. Instead, the Muslim religion was supposed to be empowering women. Now we have the assault on the Second Amendment by Common Core. And this is something that showed up in Texas again, in Denton, Texas, which is just north of where I am in Dallas. And this was part of a history curriculum that was being given to students to help them prepare for standardized testing. And it basically said that the Second and Third Amendments grant citizens the right to bear arms as members of a militia of citizen soldiers and prevent the government from housing troops in private homes in peacetime. In another location in Texas, it said that, again, that only the militia, so the Second Amendment was defined as the people have the right to keep and bear arms in a state militia. Now we have another one that's come out in Illinois that basically says people have the right to bear, to have certain weapons, certain firearms, but only if they're registered and only if they've never been convicted of a crime. None of that is in the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment says nothing about certain weapons or firearms, doesn't say anything about registration, and doesn't prohibit a person from owning a weapon because they've been convicted of a crime. And by the way, a Supreme Court decision came out today, which is could be disastrous for the Second Amendment because it's under attack by, you know, from every aspect of government, including the court system. I've just briefly been able to peruse this decision. It was one that we were involved in, filing an amicus brief. And when I say we, I'm talking about the United States Justice Foundation. But basically, it states that a conviction of a misdemeanor can also prohibit you from owning a firearm. And the states can decide that if you're convicted of a misdemeanor, and particularly one involving so-called domestic violence, that you can be prohibited from owning a firearm. The one good thing it does say is that there has to have been proof that there was some type of attempted violence. You see, back in Louisiana, when I was practicing law, that any time you went to get a file for a separation, legal separation of marriage or divorce, you filed as part of what they call the boilerplate pleadings, a request for a restraining order and temporary injunction to prohibit the party that either party from doing anything to harass the other person, from threatening them in any way, from stealing from the community property. In other words, it was a boilerplate thing that said you can't harass, you can't threaten, you can't commit any acts of violence. And this was issued against both parties. Well, when the Brady Act was passed, that started talking about, you know, and other bills that started talking about people should not be allowed to own firearms or purchase firearms if they had been convicted of domestic violence, people all over Louisiana started losing their rights simply because of that boilerplate language that was being put in all the articles, I mean, all the pleadings. Well, now that they're basically the Supreme Court has said that there must be some proof of actual physical threats or an assault or a battery, that people can be denied their right to keep and bear arms simply for a misdemeanor. And it doesn't matter if it occurred 20 years ago. You still can be denied it. But let's go back to the Common Core business again, because this is getting real serious, folks. In Bryant, Arkansas, they had put out, sixth graders were given an assignment from Common Core that basically told them that, and I quote, "The government of the United States is currently revisiting the Bill of Rights. They have determined that it is outdated and may not remain in its current form any longer." Were you aware of that, folks? Were you aware that our government was formally revisiting the Bill of Rights and that it has been determined that is outdated and may not remain in its current form any longer? In fact, I guess you could say that that's what's happening with the Obama administration. But the fact of the matter is that now this is being told to our school children as a matter of policy. In other words, telling them that the Bill of Rights is outdated and needs to be changed. And then the children, as an assignment, Yeah, I'm sitting here looking at this thing. I mean, this is not something that I made up. This is something that people in Bryan, Texas have posted on websites and being investigated in the state, because it goes on to say, tells the children, your task as a member of the NRBR Task Force, and that's the National Revised Bill of Rights Task Force. Your task as a member of the NRBR Task Force is to prioritize, revise, prune to, and add to amendments to the Bill of Rights. In other words, they're telling children, take out the Bill of Rights, take out two amendments that you don't like, add two that you do like. No talk about how the processes really exist to amend the Constitution of the United States. And I don't think there is really a process to change the Bill of Rights. But anyway, I'm about to wrap it up here, and good to be with you again. Go to usjf.net, United States Justice Foundation, usjf.net, to donate to us. If you're a veteran that has been affected by the VA prohibition on the Second Amendment, please contact us at usjf.net and let me know what's going on. We will represent you for free. And please spread the word about the radio show. America's Web Radio has a new website out now. Spread the word to people and get them to listen to this. And have them order copies of my book, Our Constitution. Thank you again for having me on today, and I look forward to visiting with you next week.